Hello and welcome to the Icecast. My name is Shane Chebsey. On the Icecast, we talk to comic creators, writers, publishers, and artists about all of their work, about their lives, about everything in between. And today, I am very happy to welcome to the Icecast Hannah Berry. How are you, Hannah?
I'm good, thank you. I'm very happy to be welcome to the Icecast. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. It's really nice to talk to you. I mean, the first time I encountered your work was via Brian Talbot, who sung your praises to me.
Did he foist it on you?
Well, sort of.
Oh, Brian.
No, he was lovely. He did a signing at my local comic shop. I think he might have even come to that. I'm not sure. In Shrewsbury.
Maybe.
Anyway, he brought some copies of your graphic novel along. Now, is this the right pronunciation? Britain and Brulighty?
Brulightly.
Brulightly. Oh, so nice. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, do you know what? I didn't learn that you shouldn't make up a silly title for your book, because the second book's got a made-up title. Third one, Livestock, easy.
Yeah. That's it's easier that
way. That'd be a lesson to everybody.
Well, it becomes a point of discussion, at least.
Yeah. You know? How do you say that? Well, however you like.
which I read and really enjoyed, and it was deceptive, because when I looked at it, I wasn't expecting what I got, because it was quite I was expecting something.
Wait, in a good way?
No, in a good way. I was expecting a light read, you know. But it wasn't. It, you know, it's a detective story, and
started out light. Everything I write starts out light, and then it just
it sucked me in.
Goes dark, man. Goes dark.
But no, I really enjoyed it. So that was my introduction to your work.
Oh, and I guess I owe Brian a kickback.
Yes. Hey, Brian, shout out. You know, I don't know if he's listening, but...
Read all Brian Talbot's books.
Yeah, they are good. So
they are. Do you know what? They're worth reading. You should do it anyway. Not because I say so, just because they're good.
They really are. So that was that your first graphic novel, Hannah?
Yeah, it was. 2008?
2008, published by Jonathan Cape.
Yeah. Published by Jonathan Cape. Yeah.
That's a pretty good start. That's a good start.
It's all right, isn't it? You know, as a launch into the comics world goes, it's not bad.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would sort of dream of that. You know, first graphic novel picked up by Jonathan Cape, and then obviously they stuck with you. You did Adamtine 2012 and Livestock 2017, which I believe was your last book with Jonathan Cape. Right?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think I sort of very noisily said I'm never going to do another graphic novel. If I did, I'd run it past them.
Why not? I remember that article. I wanted to ask you about that, because I remember reading it in full. You know, I found it was really interesting, because, you know, I've worked as an independent publisher. I've published other people. I published myself. And obviously,
you've had lots of fingers in all the comics pies.
Well, yeah, all the comics pies, except the ones that make money.
And no, they don't exist.
And that was the theme of your article at the time, wasn't it? And
I remember, basically, yeah.
I remember reading it and thinking, this is really good, because this is really frank. You went through all the difficulties that you faced in managing your time and producing the work and how it worked out at a terrible hourly rate. You know, do you want to elaborate on that a little bit? How that came about, that article, and if it still applies, do you think it still applies?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, so I wrote it just after I'd finished Livestock. And I did it because whilst I was working on Livestock, I just realized I can't do this anymore. This is madness. Mm. It's like, I mean, I think when you're younger, you're happy to, like, you're happy, not happy to, that's a bit extreme, but it's sort of acceptable to you to, you have the energy to be able to work every evening, every weekend, every single hour of the day, and, you know, every holiday, and you just like, you just sort of churn out this work, and that's kind of doable. But then you get to a point where you think, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm. And you know, I was almost starting a family. There was a bit of a thing in the article, but you know, I nearly had a child, and like that, I thought I can't do this and look after a kid. This is a thing that you focus on to the detriment of everything else, because the amount of money that I was making from doing it was just not enough to live by. So I had to work on other jobs alongside it, and also like churn this thing out so I could just like race to the end of it. Yeah. Which, I mean, I do make a bit of a rock on my own back with that regard, because my work is, it's elaborate, we can say. I mean, you know, I go all painty, and you know, it doesn't need to be that thorough, but I, you know, I like it. I like to do things which are.
Do you want it to all be? Do you want it to all be you as well? That's the thing. It's like, I mean, you produce all of those images on those pages. Like, there's no. You haven't got anyone coming in and helping you with that. That's just you, isn't it?
Yeah. Although, having said that, I mean, I've since then I've collaborated with other people. I've just done now. I've just done a comic for Divock91, which is sort of like an otherworldly sort of looking at the pandemic through a sort of a sci-fi lens for younger readers. It's been so much fun, but it's like an exquisite corpse, and I've written and drawn chapter 3, but it's the first time I've had my work coloured and lettered by somebody else.
And how did you find that?
I've just seen it. Yeah. I've just seen the colours, and it's a thing of beauty. I've got VB Glass has just done the cover for my chapter. Oh, that's a thing of beauty as well. It's just. I mean, I could get used to this. This is all right.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. You know, I mean, do you think there's a model out there where you could work as maybe just an artist or just a writer and a penciler and,
and
get other people in to make it work for you, like not just time management wise, but financially as well?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, but this is the thing, this project in particular, this one's is very well funded because the people behind it, they got connects, you know, they know to fund a project, and it's not just for if you go beyond the regular comics readership, because it's aimed at sort of like a science and well, not so much academic aspect, but is it
intended to go out in an educational setting or a social setting or.
In a social setting, it's to be read on Webtoons, but it's each chapter comes out with like an article which is written by young people from certain groups who are based on interviews that they've conducted with members of the scientific community on aspects of the pandemic and stuff. It's really interesting. I really I think only the second. Wait, is only the first chapter out now? The first chapter was drawn by Charlie Adlard and written by Sarah Kenny. Sarah Kenny is the one who's behind the project. She's the one.
Right.
She knows people. She's very good at this kind of thing.
I mean, the only reason I knew about it was through Charlie, actually, because Charlie told me about it when he was working on it. And I was at that time completely unfamiliar with Webtoons.
Yeah.
It works.
Same. But you know, it's good to learn new things, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. And what are your thoughts on Webtoons? Sorry, say it right, Shane. Webtoons. You can't say Webtoons. That's a totally different
thing. No, Webtoons. That's music. That's the music branch.
Yeah, Webtoons. It's really hard to say. So what are your thoughts on it as a sort of delivery mechanism, as a medium almost?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's great. It's sort of it's good at reaching a wider audience. The thing is, it's mostly read on a phone. So it sort of changes the level of... The sort of real estate that's given over to the text is you know it's pretty big. I mean that's quite a big change to the way that I'm used to working. But it's I mean I've got no beef with it. I think anything that gets comics out there is
definitely
all good.
It's a different form of comics, isn't it? Because the way the story unfolds is slightly different because of the way that you're revealed to the panels.
Yeah. Well, this one is designed to be read on Webtoons and also printed. So it's still in sort of like a traditional comic format.
Yeah.
But it's so it's like we've sort of worked it so that it worked on the artwork in a way that it works on both formats. So it's not strictly Webtoons, because Webtoons, like the scrolling comics, they're very sleek and they're very unique, and it's not quite that style.
No,
but it can be read on Webtoons.
So yeah, I mean, Webtoons, great idea. I think it is sort of it's a pioneering application. I think, although looking back to some, I remember Rock Comics when phones were not capable of really doing the job. And that was real pioneering. It was like, we're going out there and we're going to do comics on mobiles, even though mobiles can barely do anything at the moment.
I didn't even know about this one.
Yeah, I got to know about it through John Freeman, who was a big part of it. I was fascinated by it. I think I even was involved in something that was submitted to it, but it was very simple, blocky graphics. It wasn't, you had to create the work for that format. You couldn't just draw a comic and put it on there, you know.
I was going to say, I was waiting for technology to catch up.
Yeah, and I think it has. I think smartphones now, especially the larger phones and tablets as well, obviously, it's just perfect. Webtoons on a tablet, amazing, you know.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. So it's quite forward. Exciting. It's exciting for people like me and you and like just everyone I know, really,
who love everybody comics. Everybody in comics can get behind it.
And they should be, because this is a chance for the medium, for the art form to really thrive again, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, this is how most people are, I think, how most people are reading. I know I was reading something recently about how there's been a slight move away from ebooks. Like, there's a big surge towards ebooks, but then people are slightly moving away from that to having, like, physical books again.
Yeah.
And I think there's always going to be that market for physical comics, like the lovely tactile feel of a comic.
Yeah.
But in terms of getting out there, you can't beat a digital format.
No, definitely not. And I think that, you know, stuff like graphic novels and trade paperbacks of digital comics and things like that, I think there'll always be a market for that, especially the indie stuff, you know, which is almost handmade.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't,
these beautiful objets.
Yeah, you can't replicate that digitally.
No, really, God, no. That's like a little special sound effect on your phone, which like gives off the crinkle, gives off the smell. The smell of the ink.
You're giving me ideas now.
The feel of a staple under your thumb.
You're like, virtual comics. Yeah, that's a challenge, isn't it?
Come on, technology, step it up.
So at the moment you are, correct me if I'm wrong because I lose track of time, you are still the comics laureate, is that correct?
Yeah, for now, yeah. I will be until March, I believe. But the new one's going to be announced in October. And I think once the new one is announced, I kind of become obsolete. I'm old news at that point. So I'm just trying.
I thought it was like presidents and prime ministers. You still have the title.
I will always refer to myself
as
the comics laureate.
Yes.
Until people say, aren't you the past comic laureate? Then I have to correct them. Yeah, fine. Yes, fine. But yeah, for now, I still am for the moment.
You've been doing that for nearly 2 years.
I will say, I've really enjoyed the post. I'm kind of disappointed by this big old pandemic has ruined my plans a bit.
Yeah, because it's all very going out there and talking to people directly, isn't it?
All these things I was going to be doing, all these schemes, all my schemes. But, you know, I shouldn't really complain about it because people have died. So it's, in the great scheme of things, it's not the worst that could happen.
Yeah, it's good. I'd like to hear that you're so grounded, Hannah.
Fine.
But yeah, I think that it is a shame, obviously, that you couldn't do the full plan. But how have you found it when you was running properly? What were your feelings? How did you find the whole experience?
Well, I mean, it's quite... I was really surprised to have been offered it and quite delighted. Actually, it worked out really well because I had... I had a child. And then, like, pretty much as soon as I came off maternity leave, I was the comics laureate. And there's like this weird thing that happens when you have a kid where you just sort of like your confidence. I don't know if everyone else gets this, but I'm gonna speak as though everyone else gets this, and it's a standard thing. But my confidence in my own comic skills were just gone.
Really?
They were gone to shit. Yeah.
Is that because you had a break? Is that because you'd stopped, or was that just
I think
general
partly,
thing?
Yeah, because my brain was just cheese. I don't know what had happened. Like, there's no sleep. I was just this sort of husk of a human being.
Oh.
So I was to have something else to focus on, like to be working towards, you know, the greater good of comics. That felt like that felt more doable. Like, I can do that because I believe in comics where I don't believe in myself.
Oh.
So it works out quite nicely. It was pretty good.
Yeah. So it was good timing then, basically.
It was perfect timing, spot on. Although it did mean there's a lot of things that I couldn't do because, you know, got a little kid.
Yeah.
can't really do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, swings and roundabouts.
What sort of activities did you do then at the beginning? What were you able to go out and do before the pandemic?
I did a few sort of talks. There was, I think what's happened most of all in recent times is I think the BBC has discovered that there's a comics laureate, and no, that's true. I think probably knew before, but they discovered there's a female one. I've been on a couple of BBC things, which is kind of
nice.
That's
good. That's good.
I've been on Woman's Hour twice.
Wow.
I know. It's like
They'll have you on Loose Women next.
I know.
Is that even still on?
Is that a thing? I'm not sure. Still going?
I don't know.
They're being loose somewhere.
That would be great to have like a comic creator on there though, wouldn't it?
Oh, wouldn't it? That would change the dynamic. Something dramatic.
Completely. I think that should happen, actually. If it's still out there, Loose Women producers, if you're listening, get out
of there. Come on. Well, I'm ready. I'm here to go. Bring me on. I'll talk about... What do they even talk about?
Oh, rubbish.
That's the thing.
I mean, they do talk about some interesting things sometimes. I remember I remember having an operation and I was off work for a long time, and it was before Netflix and all that sort of stuff. And that was on, you know, and I ended up watching it, you know, now and again.
Yeah, I admit.
And it sometimes there were some quite interesting discussions on there.
Okay. You
know, it wasn't completely devoid of merit. And I think that, it would have been great to see a comic creator on there. Definitely.
Yeah. Maybe I'd do a disservice. I just assumed it would be like the kind of program where they get Jason Donovan on to cook an egg or something.
Oh, I'm sure that happened.
Probably often.
Yeah. But you really nailed it there.
It's Thursday. Wheel out Jason this time. Eggs Benedict.
I'm pretty sure that happened. Oh dear. So you have totally lost track now.
Yeah, sorry. I'll tell you what else I did, which is kind of fun. I don't know if this is common knowledge, but there is in fact a cape. There's a special cape that goes with being a comics laureate.
I have seen the picture.
Which I think was I don't know if there's some question as to maybe it was made as a joke. but it was also made to measure for Dave Gibbons, who is a lot taller than me, the first comic laureate, a lot taller, a lot broader shouldered. So when I wear it just like hangs off.
It's like Darth Vader.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen The Mandalorian, but you know, like the little alien child, little baby Yoda.
All right. But with Darth Vader's coat.
Yeah. but I did get to open a conference. I opened the graphic medicine conference, and because it's very international, and they said, you know, there's a lot of Americans here. They like a bit of pomp. They think we're quite into that sort of ceremony. Yeah. And you know, and of course, you know, someone asks you to wear a cape, you're gonna wear a cape.
You can't say no to a cape, can you?
Can't say no to a cape. I mean, that's the only time I've worn it, you know, out and about. But I would do so again. Hey, Loose Women, I've got a cape.
Yes, definitely. And isn't there a hat as well? Don't you have a hat?
Sadly not. There should be a hat,
definitely.
There really should be.
If you're going to have a cape, you've got to have a hat.
Yeah, just sort of top it off. Maybe I could, does that mean something else? Or maybe I should get one made. moving on. Well, I mean, maybe I can find a milliner and get someone to get them to do like a bespoke comics hat. What form would that take?
Oh, I don't know. What could it look like? I think what they should do, the charity that run the whole thing, should put a competition out. Design the comics laureate hat.
Yes. And the next laureate has to wear it.
Yeah.
Like they have to wear it.
Yeah, they really have to.
They must.
I hope it's someone I don't like now.
But yeah, in your face, on your head.
I mean, the last three people have been great choices, you know. I mean,
thank you. I mean, I will say the first two are awesome, and I'm very honoured and delighted to have been asked to follow in their footsteps. I think I've maybe gone in a bit of a different course. I think they're much bigger names, so you know, Dave Gibbons and Charlie Adler are able to say I am Dave Gibbons or I am Charlie Adlard, depending, and those doors will open and they can sweep in. They don't even need a cape.
But I think that's quite good because it makes you then think about it in a different way.
That's true. Yeah, that's sort of the way that I've gotten used to working actually before this, is to try to reach out sort of sneakily through back doors and contact people through emails and say, hey, would you want to work on this project? Or would you like to get involved with this scheme or blah, 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 blah. Having the cape, having the title, that's opened some doors as well. So, hey,
I'm sure,
I'm the comics laureate. Would you like to embark on this venture with me? A lot of people still say no, but you know, enough say yes and it makes it worthwhile.
The next thing I wanted to talk about was your recent survey. This I also read.
It's a lot.
I did read
you
the whole thing.
You read all 130 pages?
Yeah, I did. Sweet. I read the lot, but I haven't retained it all, I'll be honest.
Because I was gonna run a test after this to see how much you retained.
I'm no good at tests, no good at exams. But I did read it, and obviously some bits stick because they're might be relevant to what you're doing, or they're just of interest, you know. So I don't, we're not going to be able to talk about the whole thing.
Because that's fine. It's long.
We need all day. So, but I obviously the crux of it was British comic artists. How many are making a living? How many are not? And how many are really struggling? And what are they doing to supplement their income and that sort of thing? So, what was the percentage? Just remind our listeners and me of British comic artists who replied. I think there was 600 odd who replied. Is
it was 623. So I mean, I don't know how many people are actually making comics. I've had three people since say they didn't get around to doing it. So there's at least 626 comics people out there.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. I mean, at the height of Small Zone when I was distributing, I had about 700 people on my books. So that was a while ago now. But you know, a lot have gone. A lot of new people have risen up. I would say I would say there's probably, and obviously I didn't have everyone, so I would imagine there's probably about 800 or 900, you know, small press creators, small press publishers.
Seems like a good amount, doesn't it?
Which isn't bad, really. So you had a good percentage there. You had a good cross section. So I think the data that you collected is probably pretty spot on, would you say?
Yeah. So there's this magic number that is in statistics that I learned all about. Let me tell you about statistics.
Oh, yeah.
But there's this number that's, I think, what is it, 364? No, that's the number of days in a year. 360 something, I think. responses you need to any particular question for that question to be deemed representative of the whole. So this was with a plus or minus 5% error rate.
Yeah.
I think it is. So that's like the magical number that you need to get. And we got over that for the main thing. If you want to sort of whittle down the data and say, you know, how many of these people who work in this area are aged over this number, then, you know, and live in the Midlands, for example, then you're working with much smaller amounts. So it can't really be representative, but it turns out, which is a shame because it's nice to know these things. But you can get you can still use it to get a rough idea. Mm. But so it's like it can be seen as being representative of the comic scene. Fact.
Statistical fact.
Let me just put on my cape and say fact.
So, armed with that, in your opinion, what is the biggest challenge that UK comic creators, sorry, British comic creators, because it was whole Britain, wasn't it, that it was...
Well, it was the UK as well. It was Northern Ireland. There weren't loads of responses from Northern Ireland, but I think that's fair, because I don't know huge numbers. I don't have huge connections in Northern Ireland to sort of distribute the survey. So it's possible they're very underrepresented in the survey. So let's say Britain mostly.
Yeah, most of Britain.
Most of Britain.
What would you say was the biggest challenge that those who aren't making a living from it are facing? And what do you think the causes of those things are?
One of the questions was, how do you feel about comics? Well, actually, there were a few questions about how people felt about comics. And then the literal responses were all gathered up and analysed by the audience agency that did the sort of the surveying of the analysing of the data of the report. So the things which rose to the surface, there were four key areas. There was the fact there's not enough income. you just can't get the money doing this.
No.
There was like the difficulty in actually getting access to paid work. So like it feels like you need to know people. It feels like there's a lot of barriers and a lot of areas of comics which could potentially be lucrative. There's the fact there's not an enormous audience, which is I think everything probably comes back to that one.
I think that's the root. Would you say that was the root?
Yeah. I think it is. I think it's all a chicken and egg situation, but I think that is the biggest chicken. No, that's not the right metaphor.
That's the biggest chicken. The most
that
likely
is the
egg.
Biggest chicken of them all. This is the primordial chicken from which all of our problems come.
I like that one.
So I think maybe that seems like the way to start tackling. That seems like a good point to start making changes. And then the fourth and final one was sort of the lack of professionalism, but the kind of the lack of knowledge of the industry. Like lots of people had problems with accessing legal advice or contract advice or, you know, pricing or
not knowing how to proceed. not
Sort of how to set yourselves up in a, as a kind of a, as a business.
I mean, that was a big part of what I tried to do with Comics Uncovered, which was the festival that I did. Well, it wasn't a festival, it was a conference. And we tried to, you know, give people the knowledge and not just the skills, because there's so many people out there, how to draw comics. That's not, I don't think that's a problem.
Yeah, which is, you know, that's all well and good, but that's only part of the battle.
Yeah, how do you make a living from it? You know, there are other avenues other than going to the big publishers and hoping that they'll pick you and then underpay you. You know?
Yeah. Oh, I hope I can be underpaid by Cape. The honour. Someday I hope to be underpaid by Marvel.
Yeah, the ultimate honour, underpaid by Marvel. And but that obviously that's become more and more of an issue as well. The pay is low. It's what it used to be.
I think, yeah, for the work for hire rates, I mean, this wasn't really part of the survey, but I get the impression they have, from like conversations, I get the impression they've stagnated. And like they've remained the same since the 90s, which is shocking. And the thing is, it's really hard, because I know that publishers all need to be able to make ends meet. They need to meet the bottom line. They need to be able to make this work as a business model. But if the business model is predicated on people working at less than their value, then it's a flawed business model.
Yeah.
So something needs to change.
It's not sustainable, good. Is it?
It's unsustainable, yeah. It's relying on people that are able to, that are able and willing to throw themselves on the altar of comics, which is, you know, going to become increasingly few if it's exploitative.
And it was their part of the survey.
Let me get off my soapbox.
No, this is what it's all about. And was part of the survey looking at how long people had been working in comics?
Yeah. So that was a question that that I was really interested to see, because there was, I think it's fair to say, before the year 2000, or like the mid 2000s, it was a very, it's quite a small but like hardcore contingent of comics creators, and then it's flourished since then. And so I was really interested to see to what extent people were, like, which kind of branch people belong to, I suppose.
Were they veterans?
Yeah, well, there's, I mean, I can tell you exactly if you give me a sec to find the, here we go. Hang on. Career stage and longevity.
I remembered that question and I was wondering how that came out.
So people are asked to sort of self-define whether they consider themselves to be established in their career or seeking a career, or as amateur and hobbyist sounds a bit kind of detrimental, but you know, we're not looking to seek a career out of it, we're just doing it for funsies.
That's fair enough. I think it's just as valid.
And the thing is, I wanted to ask these people as well, I wanted to include them in the survey, because I think maybe if it was more possible to have a career in comics, then a lot of these people would probably be trying to do so. I think a lot of people are just doing it for fun because they don't see another way to.
They don't see a choice. They think they have to do it for fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to include them in this. So let's see. I'm gonna throw some cold hard stats at you.
Go for it.
prepare yourself. So for people who hang on. Oh, look, I'm no Jon Snow on election night here. I need a tie.
We'll have to get him on, won't we? John, come on.
Bring on your swingometer. Do they still do that? I think he still does that. For more than 20 years, the number of respondents was 13% of all respondents, which is a very small amount considering. Mm. But then, it's hard to make a career in. There's no real...
Yeah.
There's very little... I want to say there's very little going on, because it sounds like I'm being dismissive of everyone that was working before. But they were, like, you had to be sort of really hardcore to be working at that time. You had to really...
Oh, yeah. I mean, back in the early... In the mid-90s, when I started doing publishing and distribution...
Yeah.
It was really, really hard, because there was no market.
Right?
There was no market for anything other than Marvel and DC, and Image was just starting. So there was nothing, you know, if you wanted to try and make money out of comics, you didn't have the internet really at that point.
Yeah.
So if people who've stuck around and survived from 20 years ago, that's 2000. So that's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think what I was sort of expecting to see was that the people who've been working for more than 20 years would be the highest earners, because they've been working that long and they would have been established. They would be able to, they'd be, you know, known names. I wouldn't say household names, because, you know, comics are not really household names, but you know, they'd be well established. They'd be the sort of the gentry at comics and would be making the big bucks. And that was largely true, but not entirely true.
Sorry, obviously you can't really name people or anything like that.
Well, I can't, no, because it was all anonymous.
Yeah.
But I can track them down.
You can track them down.
I can't. Anyone listening, I can't do that. I don't have that kind of access to the information. All the data was compiled by the audience agency. I brought them on. I got the funding and I brought them on because I wanted to get it done properly. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. And also because I didn't want the responsibility. Jesus. Yeah. I mean, what if someone... I'm trying to think of a fallout from this. What if somebody... Nope, I got no...
What I was worried about nothing. Happens? Yeah. What if something bad happened?
What if... You know, there's always something bad that could happen.
Yes, yes. I'm sure
what
that,
if that
you
bad
know,
thing did happen?
There's always some nutter out there who will take offence at something that you've done that they deem done it wrong. So it gives you that shield. I totally understand.
Yeah, wasn't me.
It was them.
It was all them. Go get them.
Sorry, I interrupted you a little there.
That's right. I don't know what I was saying. I was just waffling.
Just waffling.
Data.
So 13% of the respondents.
Yeah, well, for over 20 years.
Over 20 years. And how did it break down after that?
After that, between 10 and 20 years was another 18%.
Right.
And then 5 and 10 years, 24. And then it's really interesting because there's a lot of people that have been started in the last few years. So between 2 and 5 years, 27%.
Right.
1 and 2 years, 11, and up to 1 year, 7%. So actually, there's a really high number of people that have just been that have sort of come to it in the last sort of 5 years or so, which is great because I think it sort of suggests that there's the momentum is still going.
Yeah, there's still a turnover, but there is a turnover, isn't there? I would
there's
imagine
a risk of burnout, I think, which is
I would have, you know, going back to what we were talking about before, your experience, you know, you were a successful graphic novelist, 3 books from Jonathan Cape,
and flying high,
and you couldn't make a living out of it.
It
shouldn't be like that, should it?
Yeah, it shouldn't. And the thing is, and I said this in the article, that if I had everything that was possible to have, I had a big old publisher behind me that you know, they give famously not amazing advances, but you know, they give good advances for comics. And I got Arts Council funding, and I was established enough in my career that I could you know, get work alongside that and you know, profit off that way. And in the end, I could still only do it because I was sponging off my partner, because my partner was helping support me. So if I had all this and couldn't do it, then how many people out there should be, you know, have comics that they want to do, have stories they want to tell, that just like don't have the time, the capacity, the energy, that are just not able to. And it's detrimental to all of comics
that's a statistic that we don't have access to, isn't it? How many people have you lost over the last 20
along
years?
The way. And I guess we could find out if we sort of did this survey year in, year out.
Yeah.
I guess I should. A lot of people said, so when you do this again next year, I'm like, next year, this took me a year to do.
I think it's a worthwhile endeavour, though.
Maybe every few years.
Yeah, because we would get a picture then. You could do it, say, every 5 years, couldn't you?
And that's a good number, isn't it? 5.
Yeah, and you get a picture then over, say, 20 years. You know, I mean, I'll be long dead by then, but we'll get a picture.
Shane, no!
We'll get a picture then of sort of the turnover and how people are going and why they're going and that sort of thing. And I think it's very sad that we're losing some really, really talented, you know, cartoonists and writers just because they just can't make ends meet by doing the work.
Yeah. And I think it's quite telling as well that in terms of age, we're actually really young. I think the average age is 44.
Right.
Which, wait, hang on, is that right? Oh, I might need to look that one up. Let's say it's 44. It's younger than... Oh, hang on, it's the beginning. Wait, do some editing again. Maybe edit in some old music.
Lift music.
Where was this? It's in the summary at the beginning.
You know, I'm just going to loop that, what you did then, and put a beat on it.
Oh, no.
That's going to be the...
Sorry, everyone.
Pause music. I'm not, honestly.
Oh wait, here we go. It's in the intro. 68% of respondents were aged 44 or under. This is a significantly younger profile than is found in the 2011 Census UK population profile, where 47% of the UK population were aged 44 or over. That's a lot of numbers, but basically we are a lot younger than...
Younger than the average population.
Younger than the average population. And what was interesting is that I had a little sneaky peek at... It was a survey of writers that the ALCS did a couple of years ago. I think it was that survey of all writers in the UK. Their average age was considerably higher. So, you know, as an art form in terms of age, I think we're very young. And I think that's probably because we're in that sort of, you know, youthful, often pre-family starting age.
I think because that's how a lot of people get lost, isn't it? Because they can't afford to carry on once they start a family.
Once they've got mouths to feed.
Yeah, once they move out of the parents' home. I mean, I was very prolific in publishing when I lived with my parents. You know, and as soon as I had rent to pay, it was like, do I publish the next issue of my book or do I pay the rent? I don't want to be homeless.
I mean, it's a tough call, but...
it's a close one. Could live on the streets.
Why don't you do that? You know, give yourself over to comics. Why don't you suffer for your art? Just make yourself voluntarily homeless.
You know, there are people out there. You know, I've seen a lot of discussions on this subject. And you can take a hard line. You know, you could take the very, I suppose, what you would call the right-wing line, which was, you know, if it's not good enough, it's not going to sell and you don't deserve
it. Yeah, that sort of free market thing.
Yeah, the free market
dictates. Yeah, I've seen that. But that's not how art works.
No, so it isn't.
Those people can fuck off.
Oh, I was going to say, what's your response to that? Thank you. That's a great response.
There you go. Wait, can I swear? I can swear, right?
Of course you can.
People swear on this. Okay.
Yeah, I don't mind swearing. That's fine.
Okay. They can fuck off and then they can die. Well, maybe that's a bit extreme. They can just fuck off.
Yeah, they just fuck off. Don't die. Don't die. Hannah Berry did not ask people to die on my podcast.
I categorically do not want these people to die.
Just to learn a better way of life.
I want them to live long enough to realise they were wrong. That's what I want.
So, but there is a way of looking at it. I suppose you could, the more central way of looking at it might be that good work will find an audience. What do you say to that? That's a softer way of putting it, maybe.
It's a softer way, yeah. Mm. I don't know, because it's sort of... I'm a bit wary of the whole, like, the idea of a meritocracy, because sometimes it works, but then it's not, that sort of suggests that we're all on an entirely level playing field, which is not.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way of looking at it, because I mean, that is usually my response. It's like, yes, good work will always find an audience if it has access to that audience.
Absolutely. I know people who are, they are, I hate to say it, a lot better than I am, and they are a lot less well known than I am, and it is
surely not.
Well, you know, I notice I don't name names because I don't want them to take over me. But there's, like, it's a travesty that there are people who are, who've been working comics for so long, who do such amazing work, who are not better known.
Oh, totally. I mean, I will name names. You know, there are people out there. A guy like Chris Ascom. I don't know if you're aware of Chris Ascom.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant Amazing. Artist. One Mark of the Stafford. People, Mark Stafford.
Whoa. Why is he not better known?
Yeah. And these guys have been around for over 20 years. Over 20 years. You know, putting out amazing work of consistently good standard. And the list does go on. You know, there are people, and some of them, we've lost some of these people. They've left comics altogether because they've given up. Or they've just become disillusioned. And you know that there's an audience for these people, but they can't seem to be linked up to that audience. Yeah. And that's frustrating to me. And what are your thoughts on... I don't expect to solve all the problems of the comic industry.
I'm going to try.
But what are your thoughts on how that might happen?
Oh, I don't know.
It's a big question.
It's a big question. I mean, I really hope that... that we can find ways to expand the readership of comics. It seems to keep coming back to that time and time again, that we just need to be able to reach out of this sort of, it's not a bubble, but it sort of feels like a very limited readership. And I keep feeling that we need to find ways of reaching outside of that. I think part of it is that comics still have this perception of being cheap and shite and disposable and, you know, tights and boots and guns. And I think that's I mean, it is great that Marvel and DC do such, like, they produce these big high budget films which like bring people into those that kind of comics. But I think if you're teaching on the idea of comics and you think that's all comics are and you're not into that kind of thing, then
it turns people off, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think there's too many people out there that could potentially be readers. Like, I'm thinking of lots of aunties, lots of elderly aunties, people who read. Elderly is a bit strong. Lots of older readers. Like, think mature. Older women who read for pleasure. Yeah. We want to tap that market. We want them.
Well, you know what to do there, don't you? You need erotic fiction. Because that's what older women who read for pleasure, that's what they read, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I had that almost sex scene at the end of Livestock, and it's entirely safe, but I just felt embarrassed drawing it because my mum's going to see this.
Oh, your mum would probably love it. She's that age group.
let's not go down that route.
So, I mean, do you think, I mean, obviously, you know, the genres that people choose to tell their stories in does affect their audience. You know, people often choose by genre. I mean, I remember when I had a little comic shop for a while, I organized everything by genre, and it was very successful, that idea, because people know what they like, you know.
Yeah, go straight to it.
Once you take away it's a comic, and you introduce the idea that it's a murder mystery, it's a crime story, it's a horror story, it features this type of character, then you're sort of breaking down the barriers a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the big problems as well in reaching a wider audience is the fact that even though comics and graphic novels are in bookshops, they're all lumped in one big section.
Yeah.
So if you don't know what you're looking for, you're not going to go browsing through that. If you don't know there's something in there for comics for you. Actually, this was something that I did try to use my Laureate cape for.
Right.
I got in touch with Water Science. First of all, I went into the shop itself and said, hey, how would you feel about, as an experiment, putting various, like, just a few key graphic titles in amongst, like, different sections of the bookshop to see if, you know, see if that makes a difference. Mm. And, like, on the shop floor, they were really up for the idea.
I bet
so
they were,
I emailed I emailed the managers, and I got no reply. So I thought, wow, I'll email head office, no reply. And so because, you know, I've been doing this for a while, and I've got connections. that sounds really weird. Just because I work in, like, weird literary areas, I know people that belong to old boys networks. And so I was able to send an email to James Dorn and say, hey, would you consider? He did not reply. So,
really? Well, shame on you, James, and shame on
you. Shame on you, James. You've missed out. Yeah. But I did go into Foils and suggest the same thing. And they said, we'll try it. So I haven't, I mean, unfortunately, that was before, this is all before the
pandemic. Then we had the lockdown. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Before.
Well, maybe there's hope then. Maybe that could happen. I mean, I think bookshops will benefit from that. Comics are a very visual medium. You know, you have comics in the window. You're going to draw more people into your bookshop. It's absolutely a whole new audience. You're going to, because comic shops, you know, as much as I love comic shops, they're dying. They're dying because they're fed by the direct market that is predominantly superheroes.
Oh God, Diamond came up so many times in the response.
Yeah.
The literal responses. It's
scary.
It's not the way to work. It's terrible. Mm. You're going to get a dwindling market.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening, I think.
I mean, it worked great when it started because the market was so big. Mm. But the direct market hasn't really served the medium or the art form for a long, long time, I don't think. And of course, the retailers are stuck in that. And there's retailers out there who might be listening to this, who are, you know, I call friends, who are probably thinking, shut up, Shane. You know, you're saying bad things. I'm not saying bad things about retailers. They do an amazing job, you know.
Like, yeah, they're fantastic.
But they are stuck. They are stuck in the... And before all this happened, you know, with COVID and the drop in the market, and obviously all the stuff that's going on with DC and Marvel, this turbulent marketplace, before all that, you know, there was a decline. And comic shops were not willing to try, a lot of them were not willing to try different types of books. And I think, you know, they've put themselves in a position now where it's a little bit too late, perhaps, to save them, you know. What are your thoughts on the retail side of things?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there's the comic shops I've got connections with are so, like they do such amazing work. But I mean, I don't really know. I don't know how to. I don't know if it's one thing to sell to the comics community, but you need to be able to grab that passing trade, you know. And I think that
How do you grow it? How do you grow that? And that's the thing. And it's going back,
right,
isn't
it? Shop windows. You want to bring people in and say, here's a comic that you can buy here and now. Not here's a gist of a comic you can order a few months down the line.
Yeah, this is out now. Look at what bookshops do, you know. They organise everything by genre, which is the way it should be done. It's very visual. I mean, bookshops are not a visual, you know, prose isn't a visual medium. Yeah, you look at a bookshop window, there's lots of imagery. You know, you look at a comic shop window, not all of them, but a lot of comic shop windows, it's just clutter. Or it's posters.
Toys. Oh, do you know what? I put a, I think I tweeted something about Funko Pops a little while ago. It wasn't disparaging. It was semi-disparaging. No, it wasn't even. What was it? I think I just said something like, I wish people spent that money on comics.
Yeah.
And I got some responses from some Funko people. I think they were deleted afterwards.
Oh,
but
dear.
People feel very strongly that.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of Funko fans, you know? And that's fine.
People like what they like, and that is fine. But I just wish that the source material was supported in the same way as the toys.
Yeah. And obviously the common thing that drives it is profit and money, and they need to make a profit, they need to make a living. You know, we understand that. But I do believe that there is money to be made in selling good comics and good graphic novels. You know, there is a market out there, and some shops have proven that, you know?
Yeah. Like, the ones that do well do really, really well. And I think because they've found their readership, they've found their people. And they also are able to appeal to passers-by.
Yeah. One thing I did want to ask you, linking into this from your survey, was what parts of the country were the comic creatives focused? You know, what areas of the Britain?
Well, there's a handy map, let me tell you. I think it was largely around London and sort of Leeds.
Well, that's interesting.
Where was this thing?
So you could assume that London, because it's London.
Yeah.
And then Leeds because of Thought Bubble. And also around
sort of Dundee and Glasgow, which of course, you know, because they're very well served.
Yeah.
I think Comics North and Border, they got this down. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But it's a good argument for having more comics festivals, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it just shows that, you know, you have a festival like Thought Bubble, and it does inspire people to then go and create. And the more people you've got trying, the more people are going to succeed.
Yeah,
perhaps.
Absolutely. You know, if you see this thing, you go into here and you go into this room full of wonder, and you realize that, you know, this is a thing that you can do, then you're going to do it.
And it is great to see people inspired. I mean, when I did the Comic Salopia Festival here in Shrewsbury, we're very lucky. We've got a lot of comic creators here. You know,
you've got a lot in Shrewsbury.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mecca.
What have you done?
I don't know. It wasn't me. Charlie was here before I was, only because he's older than me. But, so we're very lucky. I mean, Dan Berry lives here as well as Charlie and Robbie Morrison.
Bring people in.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't an intended pun.
Sorry. And so we're very lucky in that respect, but it did bring people out of the woodwork, you know? Mm-hmm. People who loved comics and who drew comics, there was a couple of people who wanted to exhibit. They've never done anything before. You know, they'd put pen to paper, they've been working away in isolation, but there's a festival on their doorstep, so they had a table. For the first
time. That's fantastic.
They met up with editors from American publishers and things like that, which would never have happened. So I do think, obviously, we've got COVID at the moment, but I mean, I suppose I'm just asking you, really, what are your thoughts on festivals and the role that they play in...
I mean, they're such an important part of the ecosystem, aren't they? I mean, it's like a... I think that might be the biggest way of bringing in new readers as well, is to have these sort of... big festivals that you can't help but, if you're in the area, sort of be drawn into, again, not pun intended, but to gravitate towards. And I think that's like the Lakes Festival and Thought Bubble. They do such a good job of this, and Comic Salopia, I've heard, and I've not been, although, you know, I'm
invited.
Available.
You're invited next time, definitely.
they're such an important part. And I quite often when I'm tabling, I'll meet people that are just like there for the first time, and I think you know, they've sort of, they'll tell me they've wandered in off the street because they've been drawn to you know, this hubbub. And it's really exciting. It's an exciting thing to be a part of for newcomers. And I think comics, I think this is the sad thing, is that a lot of comics festivals are really welcoming, and it shows, and there's it sort of is, they help to dispel that image of comics being like a quiet, like the comic book guy from The Simpsons. It helps to dispel him in particular.
Yeah.
That image that they're not welcoming. But there's not enough of them to draw in other people, to draw people in.
And that's true. I mean, when I look at festivals on that scale, like, you know, what we did, and like obviously Thought Bubble and the Lakes, what others are there in the UK, you know, that are free festivals that, you know, don't just happen in a room somewhere, but, you know, explode out onto the streets, you know, because I think that's the way, isn't it, to get more people sort of, even just like, thinking about comics, you know?
Yeah, I think that's part of the model. I think you need to be able to get sort of like the community involvement and, you know, things in the actual, things that will bring in like kids and older readers, and like I think you need to be able to have access to arts funding to be able to make that happen. And that's something that is quite hard to, that's something that doesn't really happen in comics so much. And
no.
It should, because, you know, it's all going to opera. And why should they get it?
opera's cool,
like,
but,
what,
you know.
Six people?
Yeah.
Six people in all in the House of Lords.
Yeah.
Who could read comics? Everybody.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of comics for me, you know. It's always a point I try and make when I apply for any funding is, you know, comics are for everyone. But the problem is, they don't want to hear that. They want to hear, oh, well, what group is it for? You know, what group is going to benefit?
But everybody.
Everyone. You know, but they're not interested. And that's really hard, because then you've got to say, okay, well, it is for everyone, but it focuses on these groups.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing that I'm hoping the survey can be useful for, is because it does give this demographic breakdown, you're able to look and say, well, look, if I have a festival here, there are this percentage of comics creators consider themselves to be disabled. So, you know, if we make this accessible, it will be welcoming to this group, which is is traditionally underrepresented. So please give us funding for this, like stuff like that. I'm hoping that this will be, it'll like open doors to arts funding.
Hoping. Oh, it's a great idea. I mean, I think those sort of demographics, we need to understand who, you know, how they sort of work in the comic industry. So going back to that a little bit, what sort of demographics were there creating comics? Did you have a breakdown of, say, for example, male to female?
Absolutely. Let me elucidate. Let me get to that page. Wait, where is it? So, yeah, this was one in particular that I wanted to do, because it was, I think it's important to try and dispel the myth that it is all just white dudes over a certain age. And it is largely that, but it's not entirely that. So we for the gender, it was 60% male, 33% female, and then 6% non-binary, and then 1% in another way. And in another way was, in the literals, were largely trans. So it's very male, but also very genderqueer, which is really interesting. Maybe that's maybe part of that is from being like a, you know, younger group.
That probably is a reflection of the age group, and
the fact that we don't have your granddad's genders. Step aside, pops.
And I think the fact that comics are very open and a great way of expressing as well.
Yeah, like sharing lived experiences, and actually we're in the like the sexuality one as well, also very queer, which like queerer than the average queer. Well, you know, I've got a question, because in the report it does say the national average compared to on the census, in the 2011 census, and I think that was something like 97% straight, and that can't be right. I know I live in Brighton, but come on, that can't be right. That's very straight.
Yeah, that is very straight. It's surprising.
It's weird, isn't it?
So around a third women, you say?
I think it's almost exactly a third women. It's 33%.
Is a third. Yeah, of course.
And it's
one
third. Slightly less than a third men. Sorry, slightly less than two thirds men.
Yeah.
And then the difference is non-binary.
Yeah.
And in another way.
I like that. In another way.
That's another way. Well, do you know what? I asked whether I sort of put this question out on social media because I didn't know if I should ask trans in the survey. Because on the one hand, you want to make sure that people are represented. Mm. On the other hand, you don't want to say, hey, tell me about your genitals, person who's had a traumatic gender experience. So, you know, I kind of... we had in the question in another way, and then people could elaborate if they wanted to.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. And was there a sort of a cultural or ethnic demographic that did you look at that as well?
We are pretty white. I think we are slightly whiter than the average breakdown.
Mm.
It's sort of, it was interesting. I think, so compared to the census, I think it was like roughly in line with the census, but I think we're slightly whiter, more mixed, fewer Asian or Asian British and fewer Black or Black British.
Mm-mm.
So some work needed. Could do better.
Mm. I mean, why do you think that is, though? Do you think that's because comics come from a sort of white cultural thing? You know,
I don't know. I suppose there's the risk that, like the comic book guy from The Simpsons again, that it's sort of seen as unwelcoming.
Mm.
It could be that, you know, people are unlikely to be what they cannot see. Like it's not seen as sort of a viable, not career, because it's not a career for anybody. But you know, if it's not, you're more likely to take a path if you see that other people who are similar to you have done it beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah, and then that self-perpetuates, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Which is, you know, it's a big, big argument for comics events to be more representative, but more representative of the minorities to try to, because you want to see everybody represented in the lineup.
Yeah, yeah, and you want to, and it does inspire people, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I've spoken to people. There was one ice show that we did where it was just by chance, you know, that we had a lot of female creators that year.
Yeah.
And a lot of girls came to me. Well, you know, I'll be honest, it wasn't intentional because before that point, I never actually thought about it. I always just invited people based on who I liked, you know?
Yeah.
And you didn't like girls,
I hear you.
Well, it just happened that year, a lot of the female creators I really liked were available.
Yeah.
You know, so, because there are a lot of great female creators out there. And they were really inspired. A lot of girls came to me and said, it was so good to see these female creators. It was really inspiring. And, you know, I took that to heart. I really did. And then I thought, well, that applies across the board. You know, that, you know, if you have a lot of Asian creators or if you have a lot of Black creators, undoubtedly that must inspire.
Absolutely, yeah. Just like the level of visibility. You know, really, especially if you're sort of younger and you're not sure where you're heading in the world or what you fancy, but you think you might like comics, but is this a thing you can do? Mm. Like if you're still that weird nebulous early life stage, it's a big deal, you know, to be able to see yourself.
And the problem I've hit all along is trying to bring in minority guests, you know. One year I made a real effort to try and repeat that, you know, with female guests, for example. And every single female guest said, no, I can't make it. And it was really frustrating. And
then I got something you did?
I don't know. And I got a lot of flack for having all male guest list that year. I think I only had two females that year. I really tried.
Yeah, it's hard, you know.
Yeah, it was hard to get the ladies on board. And likewise with ethnic minorities as well, you know. Yeah. And I'm not going to invite someone because of the colour of their skin, you know.
It's a balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah. I want them to be a good artist. I want them to be I want them to be somebody who does inspire people, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to invite somebody just because they draw comics and they're Black. You know, that is not going to help.
But then it's difficult as well because there's so many you really want to sort of showcase people from minorities, but then on the other side of it, if you're like one of, I don't know, six Black comics creators in the UK who's working, mm-hmm. and you're being asked to every single thing, you probably want to be visible, but you know you've got to work at the same time. You can't be everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's something that I hope will get easier over time.
I really hope so. Yeah. And, you know, the more obviously the more people of different ethnic backgrounds that we have working and making a living out of comics and inspiring people, the better. And it's interesting that you say from your survey that we are, you know, predominantly white still. So that sort of validates in a way my experience as well of trying to get guests from the different backgrounds is that there's not as many to choose from.
And I think as well, I think the demographically speaking, the people who've been working since the 90s when it was very, very white male. I think that probably has skewed things a bit. So there's probably more. Perhaps it's more even now amongst creators who are. Well, maybe not even, but you know, it's more representative now amongst creators who've been working in it for the last sort of 20 years and less and under. And you know, maybe we'll see sort of things getting progressively better.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was going to ask that actually. Do you think that it's, you know, skewed by the fact that there are still so many people from the previous generation who are predominantly white males?
I think it is, yeah, because I mean that before the year 2000, it was definitely like I didn't want anything to do with comics before the year 2000. It just didn't felt like I read them, I loved them, but I thought this is not a place where I can work.
So what did you read? I should ask these things.
I read Calvin and Hobbes.
Big fan. Good stuff. Yeah.
And I was a big fan of Asterix and Tintin. Mm. And my aunt used to send over the funny pages from her newspaper in Canada. She's Canadian. Like, so I was reading things like Hagar the Horrible. I've never known.
Hagar the Horrible.
And Doonesbury and like all those. Kathy, I'm not such a fan of Kathy, but you know, like all these kind of strip cartoons.
Yeah.
And then so I've got a little bit older and was trying to find. Oh, and obviously Raymond Briggs. Obviously, goes without saying. Mm. So I didn't say it. sorry, Raymond Briggs. Again, because it's like you know, when you say what are you wearing today, I'm wearing this and this. You never say, oh, I'm wearing my skin. It's like Raymond Briggs. Obviously, we read Raymond Briggs.
I'm sure he would love to be compared to,
to skin.
That item of clothing or that covering. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. but then I got to a point where I didn't know where to sort of go from there. And so as I was getting a bit older, I was looking for comics which were more. For an older readership and maybe a bit more in depth, maybe a bit grittier. And so I started to read Spawn because I was working in an MVC and they had Spawn graphic novels.
Yeah, I remember those.
On the little spinny things, the little spinny tape, spinny carousels.
Yeah.
And not really my cup of tea. I mean, it was fine, but I think that sort of put me off comics.
I can't imagine you enjoying Spawn somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of read them because I thought, I guess this is what comics are. And you know, it's fine. It's fine, but I'm not mad keen on this person. It's like the sort of the dark and brooding, and now I must punch this person really hard, and then now I've got to punch this guy really hard.
Everything is solved with violence, basically.
Yeah, you know, there's a time and a place for violence, but not every page. Yeah. Come on, dial it back a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I like dark and gritty comics, you know,
but
even I found Spawn pretty hard going at times, you know, and I like that sort of.
Yeah, it was like unremittingly bleak.
Yeah, it was very bleak, very bleak.
Yeah.
You know, Todd McFarlane and all that.
Yeah.
So what did you move on to then?
Then I was in this kind of wilderness where I was making comics but not reading them.
Yeah.
And then my mum went to Brussels on holiday. She came back with a bunch of bande dessinée, the old Franco-Belgian comics, which I couldn't read because I didn't read French. Yeah. And but I really enjoyed the artwork and I really loved the fact that these were obviously books for adults with really sort of fun and stylish and like lovingly rendered characters.
And at this point,
were not punching each other at every single panel. Like there was some hitting.
Yeah. I mean, you were creating comics at this point. You were already started doing your own. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I think, so this would have been around, when this had been. I guess I was probably at art college around this time.
Yeah.
And so I was still making comics the kind of comics that I made this comic about. I think the first one I ever made was this one about zombies in Basingstoke, because I was living just outside of Basingstoke.
Great.
Good times. Or as we like to call it, Amazingstoke.
Oh, I like it. That's a good title. Fun. That should be a title of a book.
That should have been that, yeah. They should have that on there. Welcome to Basingstoke.
Yeah.
/ Amazingstoke. There you go, Basingstoke Town Council. That's one for you. I was so I did this comic about zombies taking over Basingstoke, and it was very, if you look at it, it's very Spawn. it looks really Spawn-like, yeah. But kind of funny as well. I thought it was funny at the time. Yeah, so I was like, I was still drawing them, but just didn't know what to, I hadn't really found my style or what I wanted to do. I just sort of was using it as a way to tell stories for myself. I did sort of try and share them at art college, but they were poo-pooed.
Right.
Basingstoke College of Technology was not that much into comics.
Well, yeah, I think most art colleges don't really want to do comics.
No, not really.
There are exceptions, obviously, then we're all pretty aware of them. But, you know, for the most part, they're not really interested. And I think that, do you think that the educational side of things affects how people get into comics?
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe a big part of it, I think I'm getting the impression more and more that a big issue with comics and like the making a career out of comics is to do with our sort of self-value, like that we, because as comics creators we're so used to being exploited and sort of done down and told that we're doing disposable work, that we kind of, it's so we feel like that's perhaps, you know, we are disposable. Maybe this is just me.
But, no, I agree. I think you know, in this country, very much so, and probably to an extent in the US. Not in France.
Absolutely not. Oh my god! I went to what's it called? Angoulême. I think the first time I ever went in 2010. And do you know? Wait, I don't know how you say his name. Enki Bilal. Mr. Bilal was there. Mr. E. Bilal was there. He sort of walked in, he like swept through the room, and he was followed by an entourage, and the Minister for Culture was like scurrying after him.
Yeah.
What another world it is.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But they're rock stars.
They've got their own problems over there. Rock stars, exactly.
Yeah.
But they've got their own problems over there, where they've got this situation now where there's so many publishers that are churning out comics that they've actually managed to undervalue it. And so creators are having to do one a year at least in order to be able to earn enough to survive. And they're selling, like publishers are selling so few copies because the market is just flooded.
They've flooded the market. Yeah.
So it's good to see what other countries have done wrong and try to not emulate that.
It's easy to do that, isn't it? If you know you're going to make money out of something, you're going to do it, don't you? And this is what happened in America in the 90s, wasn't it? You know, they just flooded the very good, healthy market with really bad stuff. And just to the point where you really had to search for the good stuff, you know. And obviously everything sold really well.
It was not on the NBC carousels.
No, but everything sold really well. So there was no sort of... there was no measure really, because everything was selling so well. Even like something that was rubbish would sell 30,000 or 40,000 copies. You know, a lot of top titles now would be happy to sell 40,000 copies.
I dream of that, those figures.
I knew small presses who were selling, you know, 15,000 copies of their books.
Whoa, really?
In the 90s. There was a market. It was huge.
Yeah.
So it got abused, and we had a big crash, didn't we? And hopefully that won't happen in France.
No, I mean, I hope not. Because we can't support them over here. Don't come over here, French creators.
I don't think it will, because the quality is still pretty high, you know?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'll be threatened by them.
So, I mean, I won't keep you much longer because we've chatted for well over the hour.
Oh, God, we have. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
But it's been, you know, I've really enjoyed it, Hannah. I really have.
Yeah, same.
And I wish we could have gone into
statistics, isn't it?
I wish we could have gone more into the survey. But I will say to anyone listening, you know, go on there. What's the easiest web link for people to find?
So it's on my website. If you go to hannahberry.co.uk/survey. And you will find it there. And also, so the plan is, depending on when you listen to this, the plan is to have a series of events, sort of online discussion events afterwards. So I've got one, the first one is planned for the 1st of September, just sort of like a Q&A with the people that put together the report to find out if people want to ask what this data actually means, like to, you know, the ramifications of it. And also, you know, why we took the approach that we did, what the hell were we thinking, stuff like that. You know, so that's, I mean, it's free. It's all free. And I'll there's on that same website, on the same page that I said earlier, if you can also sign up to a mailing list where I will contact you on upcoming events, because the four sort of issues, what am I trying to say? The four areas which were highlighted in the report as being of concern. I think maybe if we have like a discussion around each one of those with, you know, various comics people, and then you can listen in, you can ask your questions, you can sort of make suggestions, and hopefully we can, because I wanted to use this to start a discussion and see where we go from here. Because like what the big thing from this survey, the best thing that came out of it was this really strong feeling of community. Like the number of times people said, I love comics. And then a number of people that said, I love comics, but it's quite high as well. But people really feel like that sense of community from comics. And I think we're in quite a good position to be able to make changes that, like, just small but significant changes that we can...
Yeah, I think that's the key, isn't it? Small but significant, because you can't, I mean, I've tried, people better than me have tried to get comic creators to come together and to do things, but it is like herding cats,
isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, because everybody's got their own independent way of thinking, and you have to respect that. So any changes have to be really fundamental, but they have to be small. They have to be a small impact on individuals. So trying to think of ways that we can make changes that are so big but are so small, that's going to be a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So all ideas are welcome. Most ideas are welcome.
Well, I'll definitely be looking to participate.
Please do join in. That would be fantastic.
That sounds...
We could have you on a panel.
I'd be happy. I'd be happy to, you know, if anyone wanted to get me involved, I'd love to be involved because I have a passion for comics, as you know.
I'm aware, and you've got your fingers in so many pies, so many comics pies.
Well, yeah, sticky they are now. With all those comics pies.
Sticky fingered Shane, we call it.
Four colour fingers. I'm going to stop with the finger analogies before it gets X-rated.
I think it's best.
So, one last little line of inquiry. What are your plans for the future in the area of creation of comics? I believe you rescinded your retirement. Is that right?
My retirement was misquoted. I've only retired from doing graphic novels. I'm still doing comics.
There we go.
Because I love a comic. I've never stopped it. What else am I good for? Like, literally nothing. I've been to art college. Come on.
The amount of comic creators who say to me, I can't do a real job. I've got to do comics.
NBC is, I worked in NBC. They've gone. Worked in Blockbusters. They've gone. What else can I do now?
That's it. They're all gone. Retail's dying. Retail's dying everywhere.
I go back to temping. It's going to have to be temping. I can photocopy like a dream.
So what's coming from you then, Hannah, in the future?
So there's this, that's the thing that I mentioned earlier, Divock 9-1, which I just keep an eye out for because it's pretty awesome. It's quite exciting.
Mm.
There's a project I've just been working on called The Res, which again is for young people, but it's sort of this, it's a project around young people and mental health. It's a comic and also a series of podcasts. And I've written the comic and Rachel Smith is currently drawing the comic, and it's very exciting. And the podcast... I'm not sure when it's all coming out, actually, to be honest. But I think if you Google Join the Res, R-E-Z, then you can find that. That's easy.
That sounds good.
Yeah. What else am I doing? I'm just odd jobs, bits and pieces here.
Little
and
bits
there.
Here and there.
Yeah. I think once this is all over, I might dust off some old comics projects, like not graphic novel length, but. Shorter.
One shot.
Shorter and sweeter.
Should we call them one shots? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It'd be nice to be able to sit behind a table in a convention again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you like I said before, you'd be welcome at any of my events. So
I'm going to hold you to that.
No.
I'm just going to turn up, even if I'm uninvited. Yeah. Shane said I could.
Where's my table? Find Hannah a table.
I've got my cape.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you'll miss the cape, I'm sure.
Oh, I really will. It's bright blue.
Gets you into everything for free, if only.
Yeah. Oh, it unlocks those doors, let me tell you.
So, thank you so much, Hannah, for.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been a really good chat, and I've got some great. Insights
editing
from,
to do
some good editing to do but some really good insights as well, and I really think the listeners will appreciate you coming on and talking about this stuff, because it's stuff that we all want to talk about. And thank you so much. And all the best with the new projects.
Thank you very much.
And I'm sure they'll be massively successful, and we'll talk about them again, I'm sure, in the future.
I hope so. I look forward to it.
So have yourself a great day, and we'll speak again soon.
I'll speak to you then. Lovely. See you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.